You are now listening to the Good Morning Show on WBOK 1230 AM.
We're back. Welcome back to the Good Morning Show. Oliver O.T. Thomas, the early bird, and the entire WBOK listening audience. Don't forget, guys, we still have our temporary talk line, 504-942-8853. I appreciate everybody writing that number down and calling in and all our callers. We love to engage our callers. Kudos, as always, and thanks to Roe Brown, Janella Newsom, and Jamal Greenberry for what they do with news and sports. Very few people better at it. And I want to thank Flozell Daniels and DJ Dawson Burrell for coming in and talking about unifying principle number four, data transparency, integrity, and fiscal accountability. No matter what you think about this unification process, we're going to do our best to share it with the public so that you can remain engaged and make your own decisions about where we're headed with public education in New Orleans. Talking about where we're headed, no one has done a better job of talking about where we are with the prison industrial complex and the prison system than Eve Abrams and her Unprisoned series. I think this is the third, fourth? Not, maybe this, no, this is the fourth, I think, man, in the series that she's sharing with WBOK and our listening audience. Eve, I'm going to open it up with you, and then I know we have another clip that we're going to introduce, and then we'll talk about Ben. I call Ben probably runs the only real reentry program we have in the city that that we really need to invest in and grow, but that's a whole other story. Eve, Unprisoned, what segment are we dealing with today?
I actually can't remember the number, but I will say that when I started the series, I went to a forum where I heard a bunch of people talking about reentry, and Norris Henderson said, "Hey, if we're the prison capital of the world, then we're also the reentry capital of the world."
Well, I've said for quite some time, what people don't realize is that, you know, I think I gave a speech at a facility one day that if you're not going to have real reentry, they ought to give everybody from Louisiana life in prison. Because since we incarcerate more people per capita, Ben, that means more come home per capita. So if we're not going to have real reentry, then what are we doing? It doesn't seem to make sense. But this clip we're going to set up today.
Yeah, so this is looking at some of the very many, many issues about reentry. We could have done a whole series on reentry, so this is just taking a tiny bite out of it.
Lee Hardy, tee it up.
Louisiana is the incarceration capital of the world, but most people behind bars aren't locked up forever. In fact, 90% of them will someday be released. So that makes Louisiana also the reentry capital of the world, a role the state is ill-prepared for. This is Unprisoned. I'm Eve Abrams. Here's what it's like when you're released from prison. You're given a $20 debit card and a bus ride home. You need small things like a haircut and lessons on how to use a cell phone. And you also need some big things, housing, employment, and emotional support so you don't reoffend. That's not as easy as it sounds. While the reentry programs in Louisiana that do exist vary in what they address and how successful they are, most include some sort of job training or placement that begins while a person is still in prison.
This mic is there. There's Mr. Teller behind.
I met Calvin Hills while he was still serving time for a drug charge. You might remember Calvin, who also goes by his nickname Manny, from a previous Unprisoned episode. After Calvin completed a state reentry program, he was placed in a work release job at Kenner Seafood. A bus brought him to work from jail every day.
This is where I'm at back here.
Calvin washes dishes and helps out doing whatever's needed, frying fish, grilling. He likes it. In the dish room, he puts the radio on.
I'm in my own zone back here. I clown back here. When my record come on, second line record, I be dancing everything. They be looking at me and laughing, you know. Oh, look at Calvin back there dancing back there. He said, for you to be old, you sure move good.
How old are you, Calvin?
55. Yeah, 55 years old. The two managers, the two sisters, and Miss Ann, oh, all of them love me. I mean, they love me. The first day I got here, I wish we could get some more like you. They said, because you be everywhere. You work everywhere. You help this person, that person. Then you go back and catch your job, and then you won't be late.
Of course we love him. He's a very hard worker. Bubbly, always, I've never seen down. Full of energy, comes in ready to work as soon as he gets here.
Ann Elsteroth is Calvin's boss at Kenner Seafood. She's been a manager there for 25 years. So long, she can't even remember when the restaurant started employing inmates through the work release program.
It's employees you can count on. You know, they bring them and they pick them up. So it's not like they can call in sick or they're not going to show up. You know they're going to be here. So that's great for us. You know, it's a dependable employee.
Louisiana law says sheriffs running work release programs can take up to 70% of inmates' wages to pay for their room, board, and other expenses. 70%. The Orleans Parish Sheriff takes 64%. Part of Calvin's deductions include $40 a week for daily bagged lunches provided by the sheriff, consisting of two bologna sandwiches, an orange juice, and an orange. Calvin never eats these because he works in a restaurant, and most days fries himself some shrimp. On top of what the sheriff takes from Calvin's paycheck, there are taxes. After his release from prison in May, Calvin went to live with his family in St. Bernard Parish, as planned. It's a 25-mile, 40-minute drive from his sister's house in Violet to Kenner Seafood in Jefferson Parish. That is, when he was able to catch a ride. Without a car, getting to this job was nearly impossible. Remember, this job was selected by the work release program, and when he was in prison, he had a built-in ride. Outside, he required multiple bus transfers and several hours in each direction. Calvin found it was too expensive and difficult to get there, so he had to quit. Calvin is still lucky, though. He's got a place to stay through his sister, and he's been clean for 8 years. Not everyone has a healthy home to return to, and in order to be released from prison, you need an address, a home that has been approved by parole officers. For some returning citizens, going back to live with family often revives old habits and relationships that led to their incarceration in the first place.
I don't want to go back to my addiction. The people from my past, I don't want no parts of anymore. I don't want to live like that anymore because I don't want to lead back into my addiction.
That's Marlene Kennedy. She's 55.
I was addicted to heroin, and I got off of heroin and started using crack cocaine. Yes, but I've been clean 5 years, 7 months.
When she left St. Gabriel Prison, the address Marlene gave was Manifested Miracles. It's one of a handful of faith-based shoestring budget organizations that provide sober housing for people returning from prison. Marlene started using drugs when she was 17, after her father died. It wasn't long before she started stealing to support her addiction. She has a long rap sheet.
When you would shoplift, what would you do with what you stole?
Well, I would bring the merchandise and go sell it. You know, if it's $600 worth of merchandise, I would get maybe $200 for it to get me something to eat and get my drugs. My record has always been shoplifting. That's it. Not robbery. I guess you might want to call it robbery because that's taken from the store. But I never robbed nobody with a gun or hurt nobody. I hurt me more than I hurt anybody. I hurt in me.
St. Gabriel is Louisiana's only female correctional facility. When Marlene was serving time there, she was in a reentry program, and they told her, after release, doors will open for you. But Marlene says that hasn't happened.
So what do I do? You know, where do I go? Who do I talk to? Who? Who? Who helps ex-offenders? They judge me by my record. I don't know what to do. I want somebody to tell me what to do, how to do it. Just stay out off the street. I don't want to be on the street anymore. I don't want to live like that. My sister lives in Columbia Park, and she can't take me in because I'm a convicted felony. I have to get permission to go visit my sister over there. My only sister that's living, I have to get permission to go there. You can't just go there.
Columbia Park is public housing, and for decades, anyone with a criminal record was barred from living there, or even, at times, visiting someone there, like Marlene visiting her sister. Those rules still stand, but change is on the way. Some felons will be able to live in New Orleans public housing, but not quite yet. Marlene did eventually land an apartment from a state-run program for disabled people because she has a significant health issue. These apartments are rare and can be difficult to get. Marlene is relieved not to have to sleep under the bridge, like many homeless people do. Former prisoner Calvin Duncan, who we've spoken with in other unprisoned stories, helped create a reentry home called the First 72 Plus, named for the crucial hours after release. Duncan says life outside of prison often seems chaotic, even disorienting, to someone used to living a regimented prison life. On the outside, people are vulnerable.
They're gullible. gullible, 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 gullible to the highest degree. They like sheeps. When a guy come home, they lost out here. They don't know what areas not to go in. The world has changed. They got wolves out there, plenty of them.
The First 72 Plus provides no-cost housing, meals, and also connections to many of the services people coming home from prison need. But it can only house 5 people at a time. Just like the faith-based program Marlene Kennedy was in, slots are limited. That leaves the majority of Louisiana's record-breaking number of released prisoners, mostly on their own, and trying to make their way back into the city's poorest communities, those with the fewest resources and social services. According to statistics, within 5 years, nearly half will be back behind bars again. This is Unprisoned's final episode of season one. Check out the beautiful photograph Cheryl Gerber took of Marlene Kennedy in her new apartment. They're on our website, wwno.org, which, thanks to Jason Saul, is a fabulous place to catch up on old episodes and see lots of pictures of the folks you've met through Unprisoned. You can also listen on iTunes or Stitcher, where you can subscribe to Unprisoned and write a review, which helps other people find Unprisoned. Thanks to WWNO and AIR, who produced Unprisoned, a project of the National Initiative Finding America. Financial support comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Music is by Greg Schatz. Our editors are Vicki Merrick and Katie Rechtall. Mwah. I'm Eve Abrams. This is Unprisoned. Thanks for listening.
Another segment of Unprisoned. Wow. Always real powerful, always real informative, and just very well done, Eve Abrams, a writer, producer, documentarian, educator, a great series. And this is the last of season one.
That was the last one that aired on WWNO, but we actually have more to air on WBOK. We didn't quite go in order.
Okay. Well, great. Ben Smith, executive director of First 72. You know, first of all, welcome to the Good Morning Show, man. Appreciate the work that you do, being a pioneer, especially in the era of reentry.
I'd like to say thank you for having me here, and also I'd like to say good morning to the listening audience.
Eve, you kind of committed this part of your life to taking a look at the whole prison industrial complex, you know, the whole law enforcement system, especially as it relates to people that get caught up in it. Anything that you surprised or just kind of taken back about in this whole series? What are some of those things?
Well, that there's really nothing structurally in place to help people.
It's all punitive.
It's incredibly punitive, mm-hmm. and then you're done, and you're supposed to be able to then recreate a life, a healthy life. Out of what? Out of thin air? Out of rubbing your hands together and, you know, saying a prayer?
You know, and I've kind of tracked this piece with you from the mistakes that happen in the system, even if you're innocent, you know, where
Absolutely.
The system continues to ensnare you or grab you,
right.
to the school to prison pipeline, to whether you're guilty or innocent, and even coming back home, how it's just one error, one mistake, one form of punishment after another.
Absolutely. I mean, in fact, I don't know, Ben might know better than me. I said in the story that you're given $20 and a bus ride. Mm-hmm. I heard that actually some of the money is often on a card, and you need more money to activate the card than is actually on the card. Right. So what are we giving people?
Ben, I got to segue to you, man. You've also... you know, kind of dedicated your life to reentry, helping people come back home. Yeah, I'm going to throw a couple of things out there. Right now, the sheriff and the mayor are embroiled in a controversy where the sheriff he's put on hold his reentry program. When you talk about reentry, the First 72 is really it. But you guys have limited resources. You have limited a number of space and beds. What should real reentry look like in the city of New Orleans?
Okay, first of all, I like to say the First 72 Plus is an organization that was founded by 6 formerly incarcerated men. Each one of us had their time in the state penitentiary. We also, after when we come home 13, 14 years ago, well, we wasn't socially acceptable. But today, being a formerly incarcerated person, society actually accepts you.
It's a little different, now, a little better than it
totally
used to be.
Totally different, right. Totally different. Right. I'd like to thank the mayor for removing the box.
Okay.
The state has also removed the box. When I speak of the box, I'm talking about the box that asks, have you ever been convicted?
Right. Ban the box.
Ban the box. So that has been done. Then, you know, like most places are high in formerly incarcerated people. You got places like, just to throw out a few names, like the Walmarts, the Home Depots, the Target. Those people are actually hiring formerly incarcerated persons, even Winn-Dixie.
Mm-hmm.
So guys have a chance today if they want to make it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
So it's, the world is a little better today, but what we found in Louisiana, and especially I know a little bit about it myself, is that, you know, I was speaking with a former FNBC banker, mm-hmm. David Anderson, who started something at FNBC where they were helping returning citizens with get a loan for transportation, loan for housing, and loan for housing. How in many cases that was two of the things that stood in the way, you know, and I think in Calvin Hills's story, you know, to have a job is one thing. To have the ability to get there
is another
thing.
Yeah, Calvin is actually not doing very well. And in fact, since the story aired, he's actually had some problems with his housing as well, with his family, because of his inability to keep to his goals. You know, I think it's really hard. I'm imagining having a really regimented life inside, and then suddenly you're outside, and if there are no services, there, you know, a job and housing are crucial, but so are those supports.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people to help you through. Life has obstacles. You know, we all need support, but I think it's a very drastic and specific life change going from being inside to being outside.
Then before we break, in a minute we're going to break. We'll continue when we come back. Guys, 504-942-8853. Ben Smith and Eve Abrams, Unprisoned, this series about the system, very profound, very well done, very important series about the criminal justice system. Most guys, a lot of folk, man, most guys come home with a smile on their face. They're really happy to be home. But too often, we see those smiles turned upside down because of the frustrations that they encounter when they come home. And you've seen those over the years. How do we provide more opportunities so that we can not only welcome them home, but make sure that if the prison system didn't beat them down, that when they get home, that the greatest challenge about freedom doesn't beat them down.
Okay. Most guys, when we say guys, we're talking about formerly incarcerated men
people.
And women.
And women.
What happens is, that's one reason why our organization is called the First 72.
That's a critical period.
That's the most critical time for a person that's being released from jail. That's going to dictate whether or not they're going to make it in society.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, I want you to explain to our listening audience what that first 72 is and what has to happen if we're going to be successful with reentry in the first 72. My guests are Mr. Ben Smith, the executive director of the first 72, Eve Abrams, a producer, writer, documentarian, educator. I'm Prison the System. This is OT and the Early Bird. We'll be back after the break.
WBOK New Orleans, your community station.
You are now listening to the Good Morning Show on WBOK 1230 AM.
We're back. Welcome back to the Good Morning Show. OT Oliver Thomas, the Early Bird. Man, I got the benefit of being in the studio with two angels. That's right. Eve Abrams, a producer, writer, documentarian, and the founder of this Unprisoned, the Stories from the System. And Ben Smith, man, one of the greatest brothers God put on this earth, executive director of the first 22. Ben, you're in the process of explaining that first 72 and why it's important, why you call it the first 72.
Okay, just to continue on what I was saying, the first, you know, well, we already said the first 72 is basically the most critical time, those 72 hours, upon a person being released. That's the critical moment of their lives.
That's when they got that smile in many
cases. Case in point, we spoke of a brother named Calvin.
Right.
got family support.
Right.
He has family support. Right. And he can't make it because he don't have a job.
Right.
See, like with us, Calvin come to me, come to our organization, we're going to get him a job.
Got a family.
Right. That, let me clear up about the plus, what the plus means.
Right.
The plus means providing all the wraparound services that a person would need to make it out here in society. Mm-hmm. That's being jobs, housing,
transportation,
medical service, clothing,
physical.
Yeah, all that is comes with the plus. That's why its organization is called the First 72 Plus.
Right.
Again, we does all this out of pocket. You follow me? Right. We get no funding. You know, we apply for a few grants. We just waiting in the wings.
Wait. Hold on a second. Mm-hmm. The most successful reentry program that we have in the city right now, the one that people talk about First 72, they come see y'all out the box, they come in, has no funding.
None.
You're serious?
I'm positive.
In a state, in a city that has more returning citizens per capita than any other place, the First 72 operates without funding.
Exactly.
Why?
Just so happened, we're not, the six of us are fortunate that I have a very, very small
Reverend
business.
Reverend Smith, Blair Boutte.
Reverend Smith, my brother.
Brother?
He works with Blair, along with Blair. Blair's a successful businessman, but he helps. He really helps.
Yes.
This is one reason why we're on the ground with the housing project. He gave us a house.
Right.
You follow what I'm saying?
Right.
Man didn't have to do that.
Right.
But he's a formerly incarcerated person. He know what people need, and this is what he did.
He has been a truly hero.
Truly a blessing.
He is truly a blessing.
Not just to the First 72, but to the whole city. Anybody that know him, he's a blessing to us.
Right.
Now, just to get back to, you had spoke upon the sheriff reentry program. Right. See, those programs should be called free.
Do you all have a partnership with the sheriff's reentry program?
Well, we in communication with him. I went and spoke. I don't spoke
to
several
of the guys.
It seems
like it's a natural alliance if y'all could work together.
Well, I had spoke to several of the guys over there. I'd been over there on tours. My brother was over there weekly.
Right.
Speaking to the guys that's a part of their reentry program.
Right.
See, what happens to the reentry program that are in these institutions should be called pre-reentry program.
That should
program.
Be part of the pre-release. Okay.
That's all that is.
That's all.
That's getting you ready to come to society. See, we actually have a reentry program.
Right.
Because when you come to us,
you're out.
We're going to take care of everything you need.
Right.
This way, the money that the state is spending to fund these, get them trained and all that. They need education skills and skills, whatever job skills they can provide. Mm-hmm. But, man, throw us something. Where when everybody that's released from DOC in this metropolitan area, should be just like they go to the parole officer, that's how they should come to us.
Ben, I want to talk to you about the traps. I experienced it myself as a formerly incarcerated a citizen. Many of the traps are set up after you're glad to be home. You're looking for a job. You want to see your family. Then come the traps, the halfway houses, the fact that the ability to have access, transportation. And what I have found that when you have real successful reentry, it's people like you, it's formerly incarcerated citizens, where they're not setting up traps for you. You know, I watched many people go through the halfway house who didn't have any violations while they were in prison. But they lost their visitation. They lost their more freedom in a halfway house than when they were incarcerated. Talk about the difference between having people who don't have the experience or relationships versus people like yourselves who understand what formerly incarcerated people have to deal with.
Okay, what happens, get back to we got over 135 guys that are under our umbrella.
Right.
And the main reason why these guys, because we was in penitentiary with most of them.
Yes.
But the main reason why they can identify with us and hang in there with us, because it's like it's us helping us.
Right.
Okay, that's part of our motto. Mm-hmm. And what happens is the crime problems and everything you have, people not listening, it's a rebellion against authority. Your son don't listen at you because he feel like you want to be the boss. So this is why they don't listen. But when I speak to another formerly incarcerated person, I done been there, done that. He done been there. He listening.
Right.
He's following us.
And he can see your success.
And he see the success. We got 135 guys, Oliver. We haven't lost one. Not one to recidivism.
Right.
Not one. Everybody is working. Those that can't work receive the little SSI.
Right.
Everybody's in some type of denominational service. I mean, we got people that are metaphysics, Jehovah Witness, right. Baptist, Catholic, right. Muslim. You follow me? Right.
So is it that network, that relationship, you think, that keeps people from recidivating? Because I think it's a 50,
well, it's been,
nearly
50%. It has been.
I think because the recidivism rate is like 67%, but you guys are not experiencing it.
Right. Well, it has been proven that, you know, because I was in Angola, I remember they started what they called a teacher-brother program,
right.
where we was teaching guys how to read and write. Right. And the guys really came to the school and learned mm-hmm. to the classes and learned. And then from there, Angola got a GED program.
Angola has one of the best programs
in America.
Angola
is the best program
in America,
you know, in the system. They, yes, that's a little university. We call it the Louisiana State Penitentiary right. University. Right. You understand? Because right. they can provide all the service. They got everything.
Right. But shouldn't those same services, wouldn't it be just even and Ben, if those same services that are provided in Angola, where 80% of the folk will never come home, what would the world look like if those services and resources were on the outside where folk were free?
Yeah, that would be amazing. And especially, as Ben has laid out, there are all these people who they want to change, they want to be helpful, they want to participate. Why isn't there a mechanism that is receiving funding where people who've been incarcerated are in relationship with people who are recently released? I mean, your organization creates that, but you're only able to house 5 people at a time. What would it look like if we had something with state funding that was bigger, that actually met the need?
And that's what I want to ask you, Eve. As you look at it through the system, you know, you've been in every nook and cranny of it, from what happens when you're first charged, how folks get lost in it, to the schools, to here now in terms of reentry. I mean, how amazed are you that the most successful program doesn't even get any funding? That seems absurd.
It does seem absurd. It does seem absurd. It seems like this whole thing was not really thought out. It was just punitive. Like, it's a way of dealing with problems that actually doesn't want to deal with problems. It's about, I think, getting numbers that look good on, you know, a quick glance.
But everyone is talking reentry, man. I mean, you know, I've been to the meetings. You know, I've been to the press conferences. I've been where people are talking reentry like reentry is getting all it needs in this town right now.
Ooh, who
but
says
funding.
That? Oh, butt funding. Well, that's a big butt, Oliver. who says it's getting all
that needs? But it is. Well, basically, you know, and go back to what Ben said, it's kind of trendy to talk about working with ex-offenders. They're the flavor of the month.
Well, I hope
right
so.
Now.
I hope so. I mean, that would be a wonderful thing. I hope that that's the case. You know, it is true. Ban the Box has been a huge success.
Right.
Right? But it's not just getting a job. There are all these other things. There's housing. There's your networks. I think it's one of the things that Marlene Kennedy talked about in this story was mm-hmm. that she didn't want to go back and be with
the same old environment.
The same environment, because she was desperately trying to change. And, you know, human beings are incredibly adaptive creatures. Mm-hmm. We want to fit in. We're social animals. And so if your social group is one that put you on a path that led you to be incarcerated, it makes a lot of sense that you would want to change who your peer group is.
Ben, I wrote down some of the stuff you said because it was really on point. You talked about what a lot of people wouldn't believe, how gullible and how naive ex-offenders are.
Oh, that was Calvin.
Calvin. How gullible, and I've experienced, how gullible and naive ex-offenders are when they come home. Explain that to people.
Well, when you first come home, you don't have any leadership. First thing, you're gullible to that same environment.
Yeah, it's a different world.
You know, that same environment, that'd be called adaptive behavior.
Right.
Then you got peer pressure. Then you're looking at, you've been gone 15. Most of the guys we deal with been gone 20, 25, 30 years.
Right.
And you're looking at everything that changed. The things you used to know no longer exist, mm-hmm. you know, because a lot of buildings have been torn down since the storm.
Mm-hmm.
And then just a lot of other things have just naturally.
It's a different world.
It's totally different.
I want you to talk about the mentality of, explain this to citizens. You know, one of my good friends, you know, he did a 22 of a 30-year system. As a matter of fact, he fought his own case to lawyer to get some time taken off. We went to speak at a school a few years ago,
mm-hmm.
and he had to stop for a few minutes before he walked into school, because when he was going to walk into school, they had guards and metal detectors. And it did something to him because he had just came from that. And folk couldn't understand the mental, the stress of him looking at like he was walking back into a prison. Mm-hmm. But it was a school. Ben, talk about dealing with the mentality of folk coming home and how things like that that don't seem like much actually matter to returning citizens.
Well, when I came home, I've been home since 2003. Just going through the airport, you have to go through the snitcher, as we call him a snitcher.
Right.
That was foreign to me. You follow me? Right. That was real, real strange. Just to go in a courthouse, you got to go through a snitcher.
Right.
And they got several other places you have to go through those snitchers. And it's, they're all for safety reasons, but right. it's like I was in penitentiary and didn't go through this.
Right.
I might have went through one snitcher the whole day.
Right.
You follow what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Just one, and I'm trying to think. They had the one on the man yard, so on that east yard we had a snitcher, but they didn't use it.
Right.
They didn't use it.
Right.
It just was there.
And so here you come into freedom. Mentally, you're not prepared for that.
Right. I'm in prison on the street now.
Right.
You know, because I'm actually going through snitchers.
Right.
You follow me? So I mean, you go through the snitcher when you come to visit.
Right.
You know, that's different. But right. I'm talking about when you're in population or in jail. Right. You ain't going through no snitches.
So talk about the importance of counseling then for guys, especially y'all provide all those.
Well, we have we are working with a group from Tulane, a psychology program. They come out there and evaluate all the guys, make sure they don't have any mental problems. You know, just the idea of being incarcerated is stressful, mm-hmm. and it's a whole new thing than upon being released. Because if you stay in jail 15, 20, 30 years, oh, yeah, something wrong with you. You know something wrong with you for you to adapt to that type of environment. But, you know, so anyway, we got social workers that come out and evaluate the guys from that standpoint.
And do they get to speak to those social workers over time and have counseling?
Yes, they have counseling. They got follow-ups and what have you.
Eve, I remember one of my good friends. He had done 27 years. And talking to him about going home, and he wasn't looking forward to it.
This is when you were inside?
This is when I was, yeah. Mm-hmm. The system had not prepared him to adequately go. So when I asked him, one of my best friends, man, he was like, I'm not looking forward to that. There was a side of him that wanted to stay because he had seen so many come back worse the second or third time. Than when it went in.
So people who he'd seen people be released and then return to prison
and come back
in the worst situation. Wow.
And he had actually found himself and his salvation and his peace after 27 years mm-hmm. in prison. Ben, you know, this whole pre-release thing is really a sham.
Exactly.
The one that the system operated is so inadequate. Talk about that.
Well, basically, the concept.
It's
great.
It's a great concept.
Great, great, great. Again, I like to say that should be called pre-reentry.
Right.
Because that's what it is.
Right.
You release a guy, he got all these certificates, a diploma, got a trade, got two
trades. Got the 100-day pre-release.
He don't even know where to go at to apply for a welder's job.
Tough. I got my welder's job.
You see what I'm saying? He don't even know where to go at to apply
that's
for
right.
it. So this is where we
so
come
got
in.
The CDL.
I'm in contact with with people who need CDL drivers right now as we speak.
Right.
What
I
is
know
the
when,
CDL driver?
That's the when you drive the 18 wheelers.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Okay. Buses.
Commercial
driver transportation.
License.
And you come to me. You come to us rather. You know, that's my job. I'm the one who's going to bring you around, get you the services that you need. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm going to see you getting everything you need. You follow? Now,
can we emphasize that this is an organization that you and other ex-offenders started? So
exactly.
you're providing this service, but this service is not
the
being
state,
provided by
the city,
state.
The federal
no,
government didn't start
being,
this.
It's not being provided by no one. It's strictly me and five other formerly incarcerated individuals. We do this out of pocket. We paying the lights. We don't pay rent because we got a free house.
Right.
But we paying the gas, the light. The cable bill, keep the food in the house, everything that they need to keep that house up and running.
And Ben, what's your capacity? Can you help anyone who comes out?
Anybody who comes out, we might not be able to provide housing. See, that's the most critical part.
Absolutely.
They call me every day. They're writing letters. They have their family to call. They need a place to stay when they get out. We full.
How would it look like if, let's say, the sheriff, in part of his facility and some of his resources were in partnership with you guys? Would that provide a better, stronger, more efficient reentry services?
Oh, most definitely. We got a 16 apartment complex that we can convert. Mm-hmm. You know, people willing to help us with this can't just give us this.
Right.
You find we have access to a 16 apartment complex. We don't have the money to renovate it, to get it up and running, and then once it's running, to have the resources to pay the people off that's letting us use this place.
I want you to walk me through release. Let's say I'm released. I want to contact the First 72. What is that process to look like?
Well, mainly Angola, Hunter, and DCI, even WCI, those places are more or less in contact.
And this is men and women?
Well, we just haven't. When women come out, they get in touch with us through a family member or whatever. Okay. And, like, we don't have nothing at St. Gabriel letting the ladies know, because we don't even go to the parole board hearings for the women. We just mainly go to the parole board hearings for the men.
Okay.
Not that we won't, but no lady have ever reached out to us or their family and asking us for our support. We help guys make parole. We also,
So you'll actually appear, they can contact you guys, or the families to appear before the parole board with them. On behalf
of them. Providing that they are, you know, these guys, we done looked at their institutional records.
Right.
They have a GED. Some of them have training.
So they'll provide, case manager provide their file so you guys can see their conduct.
Right.
Their work.
And we'll go up there and speak for them.
Right.
Because, you know, we know some people are qualified to be out here. Some people are not. You follow me? And we don't want to make a bad decision on it because, like I say, we haven't lost anybody.
Right.
The guys believe in the program, and they follow. They do what they do. And one another thing I like to emphasize that makes a difference also when a guy come home, most people that are formerly incarcerated mm-hmm. were substance abusers.
Mm-hmm.
And if you was a former substance abuser, we try to teach the guys, man, look, you don't need to drink or drink a beer or drink liquor because that's not going to do nothing but lead you back to that substance.
Right.
And so that saves all our people. This is one thing that helps our people, the ones that are on our
y'all promote abstinence from alcohol, drugs.
Exactly. Because this is going to help you stay in society. Because if you're drinking, you're going to do something irresponsible.
Right.
So eventually, you know, or you're going to wind up back on drugs. Because, you know, you want to get high. See, you know what it is to be high, than a liquor high.
Right.
So, you know, and then, we got a little substance abuse program also. We provide just about all the services that you need. We can get you in school, we can get you a GED.
Now, your housing is limited, though.
That's the only thing. If we got housing. We even have another building need to be renovated.
Right.
You find that we can provide housing for. We don't have the money.
So Eve, how do we... You're highlighting all of these deficiencies, right?
Yeah.
It seems like the system is just set up one trap after another. So we have something that works.
Why aren't we financing it?
And why aren't we financing it?
That's a great question. I'm thinking about the statistic I learned in this reporting this story that in work release programs, 70% of the wages can be garnished by, in this case, the sheriff, 70%. And our sheriff, in his work release program, took 64%. And what was that going towards? You know, what are we using this money for? What if that money went to organizations such as the First 72 Plus? What would they be able to do with those dollars? I mean, in the case of Manny Hills, part of his money went to buy him bologna sandwiches that he never ate when he worked in a restaurant. What if this money was actually put to good use?
But everything, at every step of the way through your series, what I have learned is that, the realities of it, the traps that are set up in the system from day one, but also what I've learned is that there seems to be a need for some political, some policy, leadership, and some coordination to create a better system, a system that works.
Yeah. I mean, it reminds me of that law of physics. Things that are in motion tend to stay in motion. I think we've put these policies
Murphy's law.
In place, and they're just in place, and we're not questioning whether or not they're working and what we could do better. And I think it's a matter of putting that in the top of the agenda for our politicians.
Well, Eva, I know you guys have to go. We're about to come to the end of the segment. Ben, how can we help you? How can people be engaged with First 72? What do we have to do as a community to get behind making sure that we have a real reentry program that's funded?
Okay, well, we take donations. You know, we have a website that they can go to. It's www.first72plus.org. They can send us an in-kind donation if they like to. We're going to probably get out with a petition maybe and start a drive since the election time is coming around and get the citizens to support us with a petition that maybe we can go before the legislatures or even the governor, because the governor is receptive too to this recidivism.
He is dedicated to 2017 legislative session
so
to the prison
system.
That's
right. He's just been so tied up. This is the first time in my lifetime that I ever seen a person come into office and had to be slam dunk.
Right.
Coming in the door.
Right.
You follow me?
Right.
On all different angles.
Right.
So, but anyway, he's receptive to this situation. I mean, I don't think he have the knowledge that we are actually doing this out of our pocket. Mm-hmm. And we have a very, very successful program that will work. Like I say, all DOC would have to do. They can send everybody.
DOC, that's the Department of Correction.
Department of Correction, exactly. They can send everybody that's being released in this metropolitan area the same way they go to a parole officer. Send them to us.
Well, and we're talking about the 100 and how many you guys deal with?
We got 135.
135 that the First 72 deals with, but what people don't know is several hundred a month
are being released.
Every year.
Yeah.
In the state of Louisiana. Eva Abrams, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, Oliver. And can I just say to anyone listening, I am currently working on a story that involves the Bunny Friend shooting last November. So if anybody out there listening was a victim in that shooting, I don't need your name, but I would love to speak with you. Call in the station.
You can call WBOK and leave your information so that Eve can talk to you over the phone.
And Oliver, what's that number again?
The number here is, hold on a second. What is the phone number? Let me pull it, because that's important.
and I think also in terms of the issues that we've been talking about.
Because I want to give them a number that's not the temporary number, because hopefully the temporary number will only be temporary.
Did your phone line go
out? And I don't know how long is temporary.
You can also get in touch with me at eve@eveabrams.com.
They can call 504-942-0106. 504-942-0106. If you know of anyone who was involved, a victim in the Bunny Friend shooting, and talk to Eve Abrams, the documentarian producer on prison. Ben, you promised to come back, man?
Send for me. Just
Ben Smith,
me
man. We did a good job of keeping you guys up. And as always, the next brother is going to make sure you're conscious. The Conscious Hour with Tuck Perkins. It's Monday, and he's going to do it again.